They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Wild times for money, both real and virtual. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There's a lot of movement in the currency market lately, including the dollar, but also the virtual currency Bitcoin. Let's talk about what's going on out there with Steve Henke, economics professor at Johns Hopkins. Steve, let's start with Bitcoin, which got a lot of attention yesterday when it closed above the price of gold for the first time. Bitcoin has seen wild swings in price during its short lifetime, but lately it's up. What's going on?
I think the big driver is coming out of China. The Chinese are very worried about the possible loss in value of the Chinese yuan, the currency, and so they're switching into what they think is a means and mechanism to get their yuan out of the country and escape capital controls.
Okay, so Chinese demand for Bitcoin driving up the price of it. Let's switch over to real currencies that we can all understand. We saw the dollar with some nice gains overall this week. What's been driving up the dollar?
I think the expectation that the U.S. economy will get a little hotter, forcing the Federal Reserve to increase interest rates, which means the yield on dollar-denominated assets increases. That's one factor. The other thing is the big surge in the stock market is attracting money. And the third thing I would think would be the expectation that the taxes will be reduced on corporations that want to repatriate their dollars that are parked overseas, avoiding excessively high corporate income tax rates in the United States. If those are reduced, the money will come back to the states.
Steve Henke at Johns Hopkins, thanks very much.
Thank you.
President Trump is no fan of multilateral trade negotiations like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He withdrew the U.S. from that agreement and says one-on-one talks are better for American interests. Ashley Milne-Tight looks at the difference between a bilateral and multilateral approach to trade.
For decades, the U.S. has mostly pursued multilateral negotiations. Nora Bensahel is a professor in the School of International Service at American University. She says there's good reason for that.
Part of the idea of a multinational trade agreement is that you are cementing a regional cooperation with friends and allies that you want to deepen relationships in general with.
She says it's better for trade and diplomacy. Still, Scott Miller of the Center for Strategic and International Studies says it's not surprising the new president and longtime businessman prefers to operate one-on-one.
It seems to me that President Trump, given his long history in the real estate business, is quite comfortable in bilateral settings. Most real estate negotiations are between a buyer and a seller.
He says Trump would like to keep that dynamic in his trade deals.
I think he thinks of the U.S. as an asset that he doesn't want to dilute in a multilateral setting.
Laurie Wallach of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch agrees Trump wants to take advantage of America's heft.
You certainly, in a bilateral agreement, can more force your demands in your way than if you are negotiating with a block of countries that can unite to try and counter your weight.
Still, she says trade agreements are too secretive, whether they're bilateral or multilateral. She wants the public to have more say. Nora Bensahel of American University has a different concern. She says a series of bilateral agreements could harm the U.S.'s relationships with many of its allies. She says one-on-one talks with various nations will make allies nervous, and if they feel left out of the fold, they may
decide that it's better to work with the countries that we see in the United States as potential adversaries instead of working through the U.S.-led global order.
Which, she says, would be bad for everyone. I'm Ashley Milne-Tight for Marketplace.
March Madness is around the corner. That means later this month, office betting pools will form around bracket picks for NCAA basketball. All the attention on games and brackets can bring workers closer together, but this can also be a big drag on productivity. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports from our bureau at Oregon Public Broadcasting.
March Madness. It's definitely exciting.
3 seconds at midcourt.
Jenkins
gives it to Jenkins.
For
Villanova's tie-breaking basket against North Carolina in last year's final game. Exciting, but a productivity bust. Andy Challenger at outplacement firm Challenger Gray & Christmas says 81 million workers are researching their brackets, watching games in the break room, or streaming them on office PCs.
It ends up costing employers about $2.1 billion paid to employees that are otherwise distracted and not doing their work.
About which employers should do nothing, says Challenger. He warns that banning office pools and game watching is guaranteed to kill morale. John Duffy agrees. His advertising firm in Providence, Rhode Island, runs a pool for employees and clients with a few $100 for the winner.
No, I don't think it hurts productivity. I think it's good for culture.
He should know he's won the pool a couple of times. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, big tech IPOs make founders, investors, and bankers rich, but there are often stories of unlikely folks cashing in as well. Snap's public offering yesterday was no different. In this case, it's a Catholic school in Silicon Valley. Back in 2012, a parent at St. Francis High School, who was a venture capitalist, offered the school a chance to be an early investor in this thing called Snapchat. Folks had kind of heard of it, students were into it, and the school could get in for $15,000. So the school went for it. St. Francis tells courts it sold shares yesterday to make $24 million, and it's holding on to more shares that are likely to expand its profit down the road. The school's president says the windfall will help fund financial aid and boost science and math education. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.